Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, coming to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your dingy country. That's BB and Bumby Rip Media, 19.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Give us a call, have your say, on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, First Nations children in Queensland being removed from families at a growing rate. And that's the warning from the Commissioner. And look, we're going to catch up a yarn with Commissioner of Queensland Family and Child Commission, Natalie Lewis. On the line, Natalie, good morning, sis. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you very much coming to the program. I'm good, my sister. Thank you very much coming to the program. And before we start, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from.
Yeah, sure. I'm a Camilla Regina. My family's from Bengra, New South Wales. But I've grown up here on Yugga and Turrbal country here in Meanjin, Brisbane, for probably the last 40 or so years.
Okay, sister. Local, you could say now.
Pretty much, but I'm still barrack for the Blues. Let me tell you, I haven't forgotten.
Well,
that.
You just killed a beautiful conversation there. Shut your mouth, my sister. Look, thank you for coming to the program. A very important conversation when we're talking about the warning going out to First Nations, to the world, to governments and what have you, First Nation children in Queensland being removed from families at a growing rate. This is devastating in a sense. So just enlighten me in that space and in that statement there, please, sister.
Yeah, look, you know, sadly, we've watched the, the rate of over-representation of our kids in out-of-home care continue to grow, despite, significant inquiries, reports, campaigns like Family Matters that have all been really focused on what we need to do to address this issue of our kids being disproportionately removed from their families, spending longer periods of time in out-of-home care. And I think that, the work that we're doing is really trying to move away from, this statewide one single number that we react to every year and trying to unpack at a regional level so we can understand what are the things that are working and what are the things that need urgent attention.
And look, with our kids being removed from families, going into care, need to look after them, of course, feed them, shelter, food, what have you. But there's got to be black people at the table in regarding black on black. Until they go, the culture's still there and the connection's still there to eventually go back to family when the family get themselves right. Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, that's never going to happen unless we really understand and take seriously the right of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander families to participate in the decisions about their children. That has to happen from the point of time where concerns are first raised. We have to be having our families at the table. They're experts in their own lives, and I think if we create safe and non-stigmatising communities of care and opportunities for our families to have a say. What we're seeing is that families aren't having, they're not in this, fierce denial about struggling with things. I think if we create safe spaces for our people to sit at the table, address that woeful power dynamic, and actually allow them to identify the things that they need in order to be able to raise their children safely. Because that is the thing that everyone wants for their children, sadly, but while we see our families, less able to access, the quality support and services that they need, then they're always, sort of behind the eight ball. But I think it all starts with participation because there is no one more invested in good outcomes for our kids than our families.
Than black on black, exactly, And then you look at the amount of money that's involved in this. It's become an industry as such. Well, we can use that same monies or that funding, less, which is millions, into prevention strategies, you would say, and helping young families. It's sad sometimes with these kids out there having kids, but helping these young families become mature in the sense and the responsibility of having a child and raising a child, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, none of us are immune from struggling, right? At different points in our lives, we all, struggle with different things. And I think that when you're able to, put your hand up and ask for, support and receive it in a way that doesn't compromise your culture, that doesn't make you feel unsafe or judged, I think that, you know, when we're able to do that, I think, you know, people are more than willing to, you know, to own up when things are getting tough. I mean, because it gets tough for everybody. But you're right, and it doesn't matter if we're talking about, you know, the health space or the child protection space or youth justice. The reality is everybody, with any sense, has always, you know, talked about the importance of prevention and early intervention.
Yes.
Because if we can support children and families to grow up strong, you know, connected to country and to culture, then that is affords them the best chance of, you know, of a bright future. So, you know, we would definitely love to see much more of a focus on prevention and early intervention. We still are seeing, you know, obviously a really high proportion of money going into the system at the tertiary and at that crisis end. And until we start to see that shift for families to get support early when they need it, in the way that they need it, then, you know, we're going to continue to see these numbers grow, sadly.
And when you look at your organisation, the Queensland Family and Child Commission, what's your communication or your engagement with child safety? What's that bridge like?
Yeah, look, one of the roles that we've got as, you know, in the Commission, we're a statutory body, so we provide oversight of the child protection system.
Okay.
So I guess in the work that we're doing that's focused around the overrepresentation of our kids in out-of-home care, you know, we monitor, like, those numbers about, you know, when kids are coming into care, how long they're staying for, and when they're exiting. And I think the really important thing that we're trying to focus on is remembering that our children, like any other children in Queensland, they have rights, you know, and they have, you know, are entitled to be safe and to be well.
Mm.
And so in our monitoring function, what we're trying to do is understand how the system's operating, how it can be improved to make sure that our children are not, and our families are not being forced to compromise, you know, on their rights.
Yeah.
And on their ability to, you know, to get the type of support and services that they need.
Yeah. Well, look, thank you for the yarn, my sister, but when we talk about Queensland, children in Queensland being removed from families at a growing rate, well, that needs to stop. That needs to slow down, and you're doing a fantastic job there. Thank you for the yarn, and a big shout-out to all our families out there. And we'll talk soon, Sister Natalie.
Yes, we shall. Thank you very much.
Take care, bub. Bye-bye.
All right.
Beautiful young there, Natalie Lewis, Commissioner, Queensland Family and Child Commission. Yeah, talking about the First Nation children in Queensland being removed from families at a growing rate. And that's the warning there from the QFCCC in regards to that space. Bring those numbers down. That's what it's all about. Have your say in Yarn Up Strong here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Feels like heaven to me. This is paradise right before my eyes. My people have stories to tell about the land and sea. It's where I long to be. So take me home. Oh, P.I. my beautiful home. 40 tribes of Bogum. Tribes of Bogum, man.
beautiful home. 40 tribes of boogerman.
Hey, you mob, this is Tanya Kernigan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1800 422 416.
Colorful scene. whisper in my ear. She said, close your eyes and listen, the rest will become clear. If you care for the earth and her children, you'll find we're all connected in a self-sustaining system. She said, listen to the wisdom of the ancients. Telling us to love the earth and water. The sun up above is sacred. There's a four directions. Mana, Ia, back to God. Mana, Lenin, into the dream. And a little bit of wisdom, a lot of motivation. We can change the world. Change our vibration. Become who you're meant to do, and a light started to shine in my head, and I knew that nothing ever be the same again, and I felt the river of the mountain at sea, my heart become an ocean flowing in the Great Barrier Reef. So GBR's marine life ecosystem lives and breathes. We should help but as a vibe, thrive, give life and recognize as a living entity. There's a culture, a law you can't ignore. And for 50,000 years, TR's lived in peace and harmony. Again, and
folks. Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. Welcome to the daily program. We are live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbleberry Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Have your saying done up strong. The daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, now we're going to catch up with Yarn there with Deadly Sister Matilda Davis, who works with the Bachilla Aboriginal Corporation as a biosecurity and climate change officer on the World Heritage listed island. We're talking about invasive myrtle rust. Fungus poses unprecedented risk to native trees. That word again, my sister. Very good morning, Matilda. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Sister, before we start, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from.
Yep. Are we live?
Yeah, no, we're on air now. We're yarning now. Yeah, yes, go ahead, sis.
Yeah. My family, we're still trying to figure out how we link in.
Okay.
And all of that, but our oral history says that we are Bachelor descendants.
All right, beautiful.
And calling from Bachelor Country.
All right, fantastic, my sister. And enjoy that journey regarding finding who your mob is. Fantastic.
Yeah.
The chapters will unfold. Ancestors are working strong on the other side. So, too deadly, my sister. And so, tell us about the job that you do with Bachelor Aboriginal Corporation as a biosecurity climate change officer on the World Heritage Listed Island, sister.
Yeah, so biosecurity. We're working on, you know, invasive weeds, pests and pathogens on the island.
Yes.
Especially myrtle rust. Myrtle rust has been my big focus. And with the climate change role, now I'm working with our community and our elders to write a report about climate change and how climate change is affecting our country, culture and our community.
Yes.
And what we want to see done about it from a Bachelor perspective.
Exactly, from a Black perspective, exactly. So invasive myrtle rust fungus poses threats to native trees. How long has the fungus been in this area?
Yeah, so myrtle rust, it was first recorded on Gari in 2013 by Dr. Jeff Pegg and Dr. Fiona Giblin from DAS, and we work closely with them. But we suspect myrtle rust has had made its way to Gari before then, as we first detected it in Brisbane in December of 2010.
And the myrtle rust fungus, you say it poses a threat to native trees, it could eventually kill the trees, is that right?
Yes, yes. So there are some species, like our native guava, that has gone virtually almost extinct because of this myrtle rust.
Yeah. So it's a forest rust, is it? Where did it come from and how did it get there?
Yeah, well, it comes from South America.
Okay.
That's where it's native to, and we can't be exactly sure on how it made its way to our continent here.
Yeah.
But we can, you know, assume it is an airborne pathogen as well.
Right, yeah.
That's another thing, the tiny little rust spores, they travel in the wind. So I can't answer exactly how it got here, but I can answer how it's hurting country.
And Matilda, sister, what are we doing to kill the myrtle rust?
So myrtle rust is a hard thing because we can't really do too much to get rid of it.
Okay.
But one thing that we have found that we can help to manage it is cultural fire management.
Yes.
We have done, so this only works for certain species that live in burn country. Country that we burn, but we have found that cultural fire management significantly reduces the rates and severity of these myrtle rust infections.
So the fire becomes our tool in regarding looking after our native trees then?
That's right, because we've found that, especially with the big wildfires, they were just devastating wildfires on Gari in 2020. We've been doing a lot of work over there since then. And we have just found in the really bad burn places, the myrtle rust has just gone crazy, you know.
We're having
lots because when the trees become stressed after the fire, they produce lots of, they call it epicormic growth. And that's all the new growth.
Yes.
And all that new growth is all susceptible. But when we do our good burns, Gallimore Giro, Bachelor, Goodfire.
Yes.
You know, we have a lot less of that, which means it's a lot less susceptible flush for the myrtle rust to come and infect.
Look, it's got to be a big area you're working in. How many staff, crew you got on board there, sister?
Well, we work collaboratively. So we've got our scientists from DAS. We've got a deadly team of them, Dr. Louise Shuey, Dr. Jeff. We do a lot of work with them.
Good.
Then we've got our ranger crew here, the Bachelor NT Rangers.
Yes.
We've got Marzi, we've got Blade and Uncle Bob and myself.
Oh, good.
Hoping to get some more Bachelor Rangers soon.
Yes.
And then we also work with our rangers at QPWS as well. So, yeah, we've got a pretty
team effort. Team effort. I'm picking up a bit of excitement in your yarn there, Matilda. You must love doing what you're doing, sister.
Absolutely. You know, Cairns country is my passion, and our first Bachelor Law is what's good for land comes first, so trying to honour that in everything we do.
Yeah, good. The so-called environmentalists or the scientists, what have you, they're our students as well, learning off us black people.
That's right. You know,
two-way street.
Yeah, yeah, like, for real, because we learn from them, yes.
Yes.
You know, they teach us this academic science or Western science, whatever you want to call it.
But then cultural science.
We're doing that knowledge exchange where we are then teaching them about, you know, traditional knowledge and blackfella science.
Yeah,
and,
lovely.
And combining the two to, you know, create these solutions for country.
Exactly, and also the killing of the myrtle rust fungus, which is fantastic. Look, keep doing what you're doing. Thank you for the yarn, my sister. Big shout-out to the rest of the mob there, and we'll be in touch, my sister. Thank you, Matilda.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Take care, sis. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Two deadly beautiful yarn there. Matilda Davis, who works for the Butchula Aboriginal Corporation and works as a biosecurity and climate change officer on the World Heritage Listed Island. Look, fantastic, and loving her work there. But it's sad that we have this myrtle rust fungus, which poses a risk to native trees. And the only way they can kill it is by using fire and can control fire, that is. And it's great that showing another way where First Nation people are at the table, front and centre, and nurturing and looking after our native trees, our native flora and fauna, plus our animals. Have your saying, Yarn Up Strong here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Down city streets, I would roam. I had no bed, I had no home. Crawled out of bushes early morn. Used newspapers to keep me warm. Then I'd have to score a drink. Start me up. Help me to think. Down city streets I would roam. Use my fingers as a comb. In those days when I was young, drinking and fighting was no fun. It was daily living for me. I had no choice. It was meant to be. Down city streets I would roam. I had no bed, I had no home. There was nothing that I owned. Used my fingers as a comb. Now I'm a man, I'm not alone. I am married, I have children of my own. Now I have something I call my own. These are children, and this is my home. I look around and understand how street kids feel when they're put down. Down city streets I would go. I have no bed, I have no home. And there was nothing that I owned. Use my fingers as a comb. Down city streets I would go.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on our National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7.
Yes, a very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, coming here live on First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country as BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Israeli Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. I'm going to catch up a yarn now with Professor Sherwood, who's a founding member of CASANEM, Congress of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Nurses and Midwives. And Professor Sherwood is working with two universities at the moment, Charles Darwin and Jumbunna. And we're going to talk about Indigenous health and education. On the line, Professor Sherwood, good morning, sister. How are you?
Good. Oh, I'm very, very good. Good morning to you.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Before we start, Auntie, can you give us your mob, please, and who your mob, where you're from?
I'm Wiradjuri, and from my maternal side, and I've got a Murray ancestry as well from my paternal side.
Yeah, beautiful. And good to see black people working in universities or studying in universities, but you're working with two universities. How deadly are you?
Yeah, it's been a busy time, and it's great working with two really good universities that really are committed to making a difference for our people.
Yes. And what space are you working with, Charles Darwin and Jumbunna? Can you please give us a bit of background in the work that you're doing there, please, Auntie?
Okay. Well, I guess, you know, what's important is that I've worked as a nurse, so, you know, that's really important for CASANEM's story. And so I've worked in Aboriginal health and education and policy for the last 35 years.
Mm.
And I'm now currently working at Charles Darwin University for a little while to help develop curriculum for the family program workers in a program called the Australian Nursing Family Health Program. And I'm working at Jumbunna at UTS in a number of research projects and strategies and improving our, you know, our First Nations Indigenous academics getting through the education system and getting through their PhDs, so providing PhD supervision and informing policy in this area and working for the National Health Justice Project, which is a really vital body that is attempting to address the injustices that our people experience in the health sector and in the prison sector.
Well, when you talk about the health sector, well, and you're working there with two universities, we need to stamp out racism across the board. We see it in the sporting arena. This is the 21st century. We see it with our black students studying at university. see him working at black hospitals, coming from nurse background. We need to stamp it out, and we need to have a foundation and an education system for our non-Indigenous workers as well, you know, and chancellors and head of universities to stamp out racism across the board, yes?
Absolutely. You're spot on. And I think this has been something CAPS&M has been working towards over its last, you know, 25 years.
Yes.
And I know as, you know, a nurse, I've been working very hard in trying to, you know, improve health outcomes for our people. And, you know, have the... I mean, unfortunately, it is a fight.
It is a fight, exactly. Uphill battle.
Yeah, it is an uphill battle. Trying to get the non-Indigenous health sector to value and appreciate what we know about how we should have health provided to us. And that racism is, you know, is a big issue. It's a determinant of our health. It impacts on our well-being and whether we get seen, you know, as people still today. We're still having issues with people who hold on to their racist ideology that's been, you know, unfortunately, because of the lack of education in this country of, you know, our balanced history, And that's why the truth-telling is so important to the health sector as well as the entire, you know, Australian population.
Professor Sherwood, can you share with us in regard to the education system when we're talking about universities and we're talking about the high end, when we're talking about professors as such, non-Indigenous professors, when we're talking about lecturers, non-Indigenous lecturers, is there cultural awareness at the table in regarding those professors who need to become a student in the black space? Is it there?
I think there's a lot of work to be done there.
Yes.
From a CAPS&M perspective, we've been pushing for cultural safety since 2002, when we had Irrahabbity Ramsden come to our shores and include us in participating in that space. We've been working towards getting people culturally, you know, aware and improving their ways of knowing and being and doing towards working with us in a safe way.
In a safe way.
What's really important is that people don't appreciate that cultural safety is also clinical safety. Yes. And if you can't provide cultural safety, then you are providing a clinically unsafe experience for our people. That can cause harm and death.
Well, if you're talking about doctors and nurses and people working in the medical world, well, they're there to help people, human beings. But that's in all facets. That's not only in the physical sense, in the mental sense, the emotional sense, you know, and the social sense. That's all a part of human health, is it not?
It absolutely is. And we've spent a lot of time as First Nation peoples in promoting through the National Aboriginal Health Strategy back in 1989 that we see health from a holistic perspective. We provided a definition on how health care the type of health care we needed provided for us before it even became a public health initiative. And we have set, I mean, I think the Indigenous health workers and nurses and doctors and allied health professionals have all been very strong in promoting our ways of knowing and being and doing around how health care should be provided. Unfortunately, the Western health system is very slow. I think our excellence in knowing how to work in this space, and our biggest problem has been that the Western healthcare system has always believed it's the expert.
Well, the black conversation is in the so-called in tray, isn't it? It's been in the bottom of the in tray for the last 200 years. And that's got to change, hasn't it?
It does, and I think what the work we do in CAPS&M is constant activism. We're constantly informing and educating and promoting the importance of working with us and not on us.
Yeah, exactly. Working with us, not on us. I love that that statement. So very important. Like I said, you've got a big mountain to climb, but We need that space. Love the work that you're doing. Big shout out to Castanam, 25 years celebration. And Professor Roy Ann West doing a fantastic job there. It is a team effort, isn't it, Professor Sherwood?
Yes, it is. It's been an amazing a couple of years that Roy Ann's been holding the stern and, you know, steering the boat. And
yeah.
It's been incredible to be part of that journey. But I've been on that journey for 25 years.
Yes.
And I've, I was a founding member.
Of Castanam, exactly.
And this has been a really amazing body of nursing and midwives. And I'm so proud of us.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud of Roy Ann and the work she's achieved in a very brief time. And I think, you know, we are the activists of the health agenda.
Yes, yes.
Have always been, you know, our exhibition that's going to be on during the time we have our conference.
And keep being active in the activisting, yes. But lovely yarn with you, Professor Sherwood. All the best. You stay warm and we'll yarn soon, sister.
Okay, lovely. And yes, I am going to pull out another rug and wrap it around.
You take care, darling. Bye bye, Auntie.
Thank you. Bye.
A beautiful yarn there. That's Professor Sherwood. Currently working with two universities, Charles Darwin and Jumbunna, and working in Indigenous health and education system, and educating the so-called universities about cultural awareness, about stamping out racism, and she's working closely, of course, as a founding member of Castanam, working closely with Professor Roy Ann West, who's the CEO of Castanam Congress of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Nurses and Midwives, who is celebrating 25 years in operation. Fantastic to see. Have you seen Yarn Up Strong? Add the conversation here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.